All right, we're live tonight. I don't want you to pause because I don't have that much time. I sense, this is not why I came here tonight, but I sense after I get here, my congregation's being my congregation. Crises, past, everything's okay now. We don't have to keep our commitments. We don't have to put ourselves out. But we don't have to keep the intensity of the fight. The girl assigned to the 300 had to call people to get enough voices of faith here. There are a lot of you that were scheduled tonight, probably not even listening, didn't show. Children playing. I told you my surgery was an emergency need to open a blocked kidney. And if the corrective surgery to open the block does not heal or prove open, I will have to repeat the surgery between 3 and 4 months from now. Unlike a stent in the heart, the stents in the kidney are made of material that doesn't mix well with urine. And they calcify after 5 to 6 months and become like rocks and can't get them out without ripping yourself apart. So the stent has to be replaced every 3 to 4 months, both of them. Full anesthesia. Same procedure. I'm looking forward to that the rest of my life, unless there's a healing in the area of the blockage. And that says nothing concerning the stage 4 cancer. Keeping her powder dry or taking hormones. Did that 4 years ago. Six weeks from now, radiation starts 5 to 6 weeks, continuing on up into next year, at least 7 weeks every day. Homeopathic treatments, which I happen to believe in, that occupy me 5 days a week, 3 to 4 hours a day. All made unnecessary. If the truth of God's word is claimed and faith is turned loose from this congregation whose lives have been saved by the word, and have for too many years been like the children Paul lamented that won't grow up, won't run up the hill and hold up Moses' arms. You just proved it. Not the ones that are here. If you had to be called, you just proved it. My wife and I will see this through by faith. But there may be no church There are a lot of people in this congregation that want to talk commitments but not walk the walk. I just banned a family. Banned them from the church. In front of you, you would think he's the most stellar member of this congregation. He's rooted and grounded in a fundamentalist church background. You can't get that self-righteousness and hypocrite tendency out of those people. He wants his cake and eat it too. He wants to be viewed as one of the stellar committed ones of the congregation. Just don't want to make the commitment. Reminds me of another young man that I banned who, I didn't ban him because he couldn't keep his commitment. I think I've made public announcements, reduce your commitment. Be humble enough to recognize your reach went beyond your grasp and take a lesser place. But don't play hypocrite on me. Starts not showing up for his commitment, not the first man I'm talking about. This is a younger man, single man. I'm going on a parenthesis side road. When reached, well, I have to choose between a job and my commitment. Huh? I mean, am I talking to an insane person? You don't choose between a job and your commitment. You breach your commitment. And you face yourself. This is as old as the rich young ruler. What more might I do to enhance my view of my perfection? Well, I've done all this. Tell me the next thing. Boy, wait till Jesus handed it to him. He went away. Back to the first man I'm talking about. He's been nothing but a hypocritical disappointment from day one, and I've given him mercy beyond belief. He gave a 7-month commitment once. And counted the days until it was ended. Maybe the only 7-month commitment man that could tell me how many hours yet remained on his 7-month commitment. Because he wanted to be one of those that could say, I did it. And he's repeatedly been like this. Close, but not close enough. Mouthing and retracting. Mouthing and rationalizing. Mouthing and excusing. Mouthing and lying. Oh, at this time, pastor's crises, this time, writes a letter. I have just found this wonderful job. I mean, this spectacular opportunity that I have with this new job, but with the crises facing pastor, I feel I should make a commitment and come on staff. I said to my wife, I've dealt with this man for years. This is vintage jerk. Oh, look what I'm giving up to come and help in the crises. will up yours with a hay wagon sideways. Don't ever try that on me. And certainly don't try it on God, because He knows what a crock of spit you are. You could be so lucky as to be here every night anticipating and praying that God will give me the strength to come, instead of seeing that I'm not here and deciding, well, I'm not going to be a voice of faith when it's not live. You're needed more when it's not live. But you have never come through in 29 years, with few exceptions. I said, tell him, no thanks. Take your opportunity. Well, then, he knows he's made the wrong choice, so he whines some more. Well, I want pastors to make the decision for me. Huh? Well, okay, call him and tell him that his attitude's right and he understands he's not doing God a favor. Well, give him a chance. Only God knows the exaggerated salary we're going to give him. Well, I've got to pray about it. Now, I wonder what language he's going to talk to God and in what manner God is going to answer him. Because last time I checked, God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, and you don't have an independent prayer line for that kind of activity in the church. First, he lied. I'll let pastor make the decision, then he's got to pray about it. Go find another church. Don't write any letters. Don't call. Go find another church. They'll put up with that hypocrisy, I think, probably, as long as you send some money to them, forever. Probably listening right now. Go find another church, you hypocrite. So you'll have company when you get to hell. Because like attracts like. And flies don't mingle with eagles. Now, I am a merciful pastor in spite of appearance. I don't know what God's doing. Don't know why His word seems not to be honored in my case. Don't know whether my amen is at the level it should be. Just know this, what I preached. Though He slay me, yet will I trust Him. I'll have heaven is my home. He'll have some explaining to do to other people about His word. So as arrogant as that sounds, I die faithing. I'm the winner, God's the loser. I've taught you faithfully for 29 years. Too many of you are still faithless, self-serving jerks that cannot grow up and quit you like men and serve God enduringly and with patience when the crisis comes. I'll tell you something. To you faithless ones that need this speech tonight, I don't need your prayers. You're the loser. If two shall agree, that's me and my wife. and I know she'll be there. She hadn't heard a tenth of the teaching. You've been gluttonized with. You are the most spoiled congregation 2,000 years of Christianity has ever seen produced. You have luxuriated in teaching in one Sunday that most Christians don't get in an entire year. You have assumed I'll be here forever. And you're unwilling to do anything to prolong that. My nausea problem is still with me. My cancer is still here. I have the stents in, and they'll work fine for another 3.5 months. God could enter in, they'd just be removed. I don't need any replacement. God can whip this cancer before radiation starts. But I do believe God has inextricably brought this congregation to a challenge point. You've been nothing but a beneficiary for too long, and I don't want to hear. I want to hear the word tithe. You're a thief, a robber, and a crook if you're not paying tithe, and at least half of you are not. You've given nothing when you pay tithe. You've removed the stigma of being a thief and a robber and the curse of God upon you, and there's only one place you can put it, the place you've been taught, and if you're listening tonight, this is the place you put it. So don't give me that jerk's attitude that you're doing anybody a favor. You're putting out when you keep your commitments. When you say you'll be here, you'll be here. Rain, shine, whatever. Tired of yelling at you. Right now I can hardly afford any wasted emotional energy units. I got staff members back here that are deteriorating because my wife hasn't had her hand on the machine for a couple of weeks. I'm tired of calling at 6 o'clock and they cannot tell me what is programmed at 7. Tell me they care. I'm tired of a little snot-nosed kid back there that has only learned since he's been here how to say, "I'm sorry, ma'am, sorry, sir." He's a backslidden leech. That's all he is, getting a free house to stay in and overpaid, and he can't pay attention to what is being paid at 7 o'clock. And if you don't calm my spirit a bit before 7:30, I'm firing his ass and throwing him out of the building at 7:30 when I walk out of this room. So I suggest somebody get in that skinny, long-necked musician's face and scare the liver out of him for the next 10 minutes, and not you, my wife. Somebody else go in there and make a man out of him in the next 2 minutes. I'm not tolerating the abuse the staff is giving my wife like they have a vacation because she's having to take care of me. I better hear sounds erupting back there, and you might as well help them, Reggie. You know who it is. Lock the camera down. You go get in his face too. And he needs to spend the rest of the night getting the saliva off of his face that you put in it. I'm talking about that piano playing, long-legged wolf. I'm talking about long-legged piano playing Clayton. You better grow up or leave. Yes, sir.
Go.
No, the camera's fine. Need to tighten it till it's slipping. Okay, do what you have to do. I'm waiting to hear sounds from back there. They might be using words not allowable on TV, so turn it down. You're either going to quit your like men. I'll spend more years than most of you think preaching His Word. Me and God will fight this out as we did 4 years ago. My wife will be there. I said years ago, I will not pastor a church that has to minister to me. I will minister to them. What I'm doing right now. I don't need your sympathy. I don't need your crocks of tears. I don't need your, what I want to say, BS. I need men and women of faith that will keep their commitment and step up to the plate and be counted on. And that's what God gave apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers to do. To perfect you saints that are sitting around drinking it in and putting nothing out. Either be man or woman enough to call and say, I renege on my commitment and to hell with it, and get your ass out of this church, or adjust your commitment with courage and with faith to something you will do, or keep the commitment, which is what you ought to do. And any modification of those options, you might as well kiss your ass goodbye, because you're going to hell. To whom much is given, much is required. And you're going to get the same truth from me if I have to give it to you from a hospital bed. Now, if you don't like it, leave. If you can straighten your ass out, get on the phone and start renewing your commitments and apologizing if you fail to keep it and were not here this week as a voice of faith when you were supposed to be. I will not make this woman be a beggar like we had a voice of faith coordinator a few years ago trying to make you think you're doing a favor to come in here and keep your commitment on these phones. You made a commitment to God. Keep it. Now get on the phone. You know, in the earlier half hour, I talked about that problem child of this ministry that I've dealt with for years and finally got enough. The one who wants to come here and work as long as we recognize what a sacrifice it is for him to do it. And then when he gets the chance, I need to pray about it. You know, that self-righteous spiritual baloney that fundamentalist Christians and Pentecostal Christians and Assembly of God Christians and Baptist Christians fall back on is the most hypocritical insult to God and His program ever uttered. Before you pray, read Luke 14. Then when you pray, God's going to say, you asshole, I already told you. If any man will come after me and hate not his father, his mother, his wife, his children, his brother, his sister, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Whosoever does not forsake all that he hath cannot be my disciple. That's a learner. You can't even start learning. He that taketh not his cross and cometh after me. What is there to pray about? Other than, oh God, help me have the courage to do it. And he's going to say, I ain't going to give you that courage. I mean, what did Peter pray about when Jesus passed by and his fishing business was at stake? See, my problem as a preacher, I don't fit because I believe this stuff. I believe he meant what he said. I had a wife that wouldn't follow me with the cross. She kept trying to tell me where to go. I said, I'm the 19-year-old you married. Everything else we're partners on. Where God sends me, you're not determining. You just follow or stay home. Well, let's get marriage counseling. For what? Well, all you want to do is say, Luke 14. I'm still saying it. I did it, she wouldn't. Thank God the bitch had gone. Look what God gave me in her place. That's what Jesus said. No man hath forsaken. But he'll get back. Trying to forsake to get back, I just forsook. How I got to pray about it? Read Luke 14. Well, I'm not ready to do that yet. Then quit your spiritual garbage. Admit it. And take a smaller step. But I'm tired of these Christians that want the credit for 100% when they won't even give 2%. They won't keep a commitment 3 weeks. I'm open to adjustment, not hypocrisy. The cross was not a partial affair. He kept his commitment unto death. That's the faith of Jesus. He goes on in Luke 14 and says what happens to those who make the commitment, but you can't make the commitment expecting that. The terms have not changed. I don't know what the consequences might have been looming on the horizon for Matthew, when he just abandoned the tax table. It's probably been centuries since a tax collector just walked out of the office, left things right where they were, and followed Jesus. Matthew didn't have time to pray. Jesus passed by. Peter had a fishing business and a wife. The only time you hear about his wife is when she's sick and Jesus heals her. She wasn't walking the roads of Samaria and Galilee with Jesus. She didn't have a husband coming home at 5:30 so they could sit around and have dinner and the family together. You make me sick with your pseudo-Christianity. I'll put up with it. Until you start talking the talk and won't take the walk. Just keep your mouth shut. Hide in the corner, listen, pay your tithe. But when you make a commitment, keep it. And quit making excuses. And don't even try. I gotta pray about it. Did you mean what you said, Jesus? Is that what your prayer is going to be? Now get on the telephone. We're going to the table of the Lord. There are two elements. The night that Jesus was betrayed, he took bread and broke it, saying, "This is my body, which is broken for you." Took the cup. "This is my blood, which is shed for you. This do in remembrance of me until I come again." Why bread and wine? Oh, by the way, it was unleavened bread, typical of a life that had no sin in it. There was only one antitype. Broken bread, not the little round heathen wafers that the Catholics use, patterned after the masa cakes baked to the Queen of the Heavens, or Baal worship, the sun, carried in a monstrous sunburst. Broken bread. A loaf that he broke. Why not just the wine? They were celebrating Passover and giving its antitype meaning, its fulfillment. If I die of sickness, I will go out declaring this truth. That Passover they commemorated had blood on the door from the slain lamb. And they went inside the house and ate the roasted lamb whose blood had been shed for strength. The sandals on their feet, staff in hand. Because God not only would deliver them from Egypt, the bondage of sin, that night, he would deliver them from all sickness. And as the book of Psalms says, they would go forth, not a feeble one in their midst. Every year when the males of the tribe would bring the silver half shekel, as redemption money, not only did it give them standing as it matched the pattern in the tabernacle and then the temple, that there be no plague come nigh their dwelling. When sin caused God to send serpents in their midst, to bite them and they were dying. He told Moses to make a brazen serpent as a type of the sin bearer, put it on a pole and lift it up. All who looked were not only forgiven of their sins, they were healed of the snake-bitten condition. I don't think God's a tantalizer. I know he's a God who hides himself. His timing is not all our timing. But this was a stream of prophecy to be fulfilled. When Christ gave himself at Calvary. A written roadmap of meaning. Consummated at Calvary. Our need to be forgiven is such, God did not need to add anything about healing. He could have taken them out of Egypt the way Cecil B. DeMille took them out. Some on stretchers and some on canes and crutches and being held up by loved ones. He didn't. That complaining, miserable bunch, that disgraceful, ungrateful, carping bunch of self-centered rats. He healed all their sick and took them out. Because he was remembering a promise given to Abraham. And he was writing with indelible imprint in the history of these people the truth of his grace to be fulfilled in his Son and a new covenant with much higher standing than any promise made to Abraham. He wouldn't leave sickness out of the equation. The faith of Christ obtained something, and he's risen to be our advocate with the Father. And the restrictions to the Spirit's presence in our life have been broken apart, ripped as the veil from top to bottom. And the rejuvenating, healing life that raised up Christ from the dead is available at this table. And when the fullest prophecy is given in Isaiah, I'll say it to my dying breath. Surely, surely, He picked up our sicknesses and carried away our pains. He was made to be acquainted with sickness for my sake and your sake. The punishment to restore our lost health was laid upon Him. And with His stripes, we are healed. Peter puts it in past tense. We were healed. Won't you take the bread with me tonight? No. We're not talking about something that you have to convince God and talk Him into doing. We're talking about something He chose to do, just like He did with those Israelites. He made them whole. He laid my sicknesses on His Son. And His Son was made to be acquainted with sickness for my sake and yours. Who He amends the hearing of us. Take the bread and claim it. With His stripes, we are healed. Don't have to be worthy. Can't be worthy. Made worthy. Of the blood of the Lamb.